Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Every year, the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Revolution selects the slogan to guide the nation's focus. Since 2009, a clear priority has been placed on improving the country's economic condition and ensuring the well-being of the Muslim people in Iran. In this conversation, we explore the significance of economics in Islam, the concept of economic jihad, and how the public's role is essential in fulfilling this year's nation and national vision. So welcome, dear brothers and sisters, to your program, The Viewpoint from IRIB English Radio. This is the humble host of the show, Sayyid Ali, and here I am with dear brother Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, dear brother. Welcome to your program.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Really good to have you here. And also we do have brother Muhammad, my brother in faith. Good to have you here.
It's a pleasure.
I do remember in our society, old generation, so many of them grandpas, they used to go to seminaries to took some intensive, course on business, how to do business. Exactly. And then they start do business in the bazaar and market. Thank you.
Exactly.
So dear brother Rouhani, we have this hadith and it is being quoted and heard a lot that poverty is close to disbelief. What does this hadith tell us about Islam's view on poverty and its societal impact?
You see that Islam's emphasis on economic justice is very much crucial and vital. Because of what? Because, as you rightly mentioned, there is a beautiful hadith in which it is said that poverty is a threat to faith. Mm-hmm. According to this hadith, poverty almost leads to disbelief, as you rightly mentioned. I think this hadith highlights Islam's warning against economic neglect. That is why in both the Quran and Hadith and Riwayat, the economic issues, points are overemphasized, as it is mentioned that in the Holy Quran we have 450 verses about the economic issues. Mm-hmm. And then the point is that why is such an emphasis is put on economic issues? I think it is because of this, that economic stability enables a kind of moral and religious growth. Mm. Without economic stability, you would not expect the people and the Muslims to improve and to grow in terms of morality, ethical kind of affairs, and
it's like fundamental things. Like
yeah, of course, of course. That is why a struggling society cannot focus on spirituality. Mm. This is what practically we can experience. This is the main reason that we see that the supreme leader, who is a jurist, who is a faqih, who is a alim, a hakim, a wise kind of a person. He overemphasized for many years, more than a decade, on economic issues, because they are fully aware that when poverty overwhelm or is predominant on the society, on the people, then moral growth also would be in danger.
Yeah. Because being poor is something, being not developing something for a society. And having said that, being in that position makes you to be like have a weak society, and you are, and other people, your enemies, are ready to attack you.
Exactly.
That would be something else. Because if you end up being poor for yourself, nothing hurts you. It wouldn't, I think, bother us much. But
This is the reason why, in Islamic jurisprudence and our fiqh, we see that. Fiqh dedicates entire books into the, economic kind of laws. Mm. Like, for example, for trade, we have Kitab al-Bay'ah, the entire book for bay'ah, for tijara, for business. Or for example, ijara, leasing, we have entire books. We have, for example, for loans, for rahan, for charity, khums and zakat, for inheritance. All these, if you refer to our jurisprudential sources, you see that the entire volumes of books of fiqh are dedicated to these economic, issues and points. So that is why I think economy is very much emphasized in Islamic jurisprudence. Mm-hmm. Because of this, that the self-reliant economy free from foreign dependency mm-hmm. is the main concern for the Supreme Leader, because we had a kind of bad experience of colonialism in the Islamic yeah. world. It was because of this that the Muslim countries at that time, they were really weak and poor in terms of economy, and they were very easily attacked and invaded by the colonialists, yeah. and they were misused.
They couldn't defend themselves.
Yeah, yeah. This is the point that we should take the lessons from the historical experiences of the nations. Mm. That is why nowadays our main concern, our main focus for Muslim Ummah, for Islamic countries, should be this, that how can we improve the Muslim nations economically so that they would not be vulnerable for the enemies. The very beautiful kind of terms we have for mujahideen of iqtisad, or let's say economic kind of jihad, we have in Islamic terminology. Yeah. They're mentioned in our, let's say, sources. Some of them are like this, that we have martyrs of economy, mm-hmm. Those who die striving for economic independence, like laborers, like farmers, are likened to war martyrs. And this is very nice. And it says in Islam that when you try to provide your families, your children with sustenance, this thing that you give to your family members, to your children, they will be considered as sadaqat for you. Hmm. Yeah, while you, for example, feed your children, it is your duty, your responsibility. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala rewards you and consider it as a kind of charity for you, as a kind of sadaqat jariyah for you. So that's why I think Islam is the religion that focus a lot on economic issues and affairs. That's why Supreme Leader always focus on it. And but unfortunately, sometimes there are Muslims who may misunderstand the true teachings of Islam, not emphasizing that much on economic, let's say, issues. As you rightly mentioned, there are some Sufis or these kind of groups of people who say that no, Muslims should live under the bush, just pray and just recite the Holy Quran and do not care about their economic, let's say, growth.
Yeah.
This is, I think it seems to be a kind of misconception, because these kind of Muslims very easily can be misguided, can be misused, can be attacked, their lands can be invaded, their opportunities, all the facilities they have, they can be usurped by the enemies. Yeah. And at the end of the day, the very iman, the very faith that they claim will be also stolen by their enemies. That's why we have to correct our understanding of the Islam.
Thank you so much. We are going to continue having the conversation and talking with dear brother Muhammad. Dear brother Muhammad, speaking of economic jihad, what does it mean, this concept, in the Islamic context, and why is it considered one of the greatest act of worship?
You see, the word jihad literally itself means to struggle.
Yeah, strive.
And that's why it's used very generously in different parts of the deen. So, for example, a person who become a jurist, a person who studies jurisprudence and fiqh and eventually becomes a jurist, we call him mujtahid, a person who is struggling in what way? In trying to find the knowledge and the ma'arif of the deen, right? And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Prophet himself, talks about the jihad for the sisters to upbring their children, and when she goes in labor, it's as if she's fighting in the way of jihad, in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then we have the jihadul akbar, the greater jihad, which is against the nafs. When the Prophet came back from the battle, he tells his companion, Hani an lakum, that now you've came back from a jihadul asghar, a smaller jihad, which is a jihad in the battlefield, struggling in the battlefield. Now you have to fight and struggle the jihadul akbar, the greater jihad, which is against your own nafs. So these are all the different manifestations of struggling in the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. One of the very important ones is the jihad of economy. And there are many ways that we can look at this jihad of economy. One is, of course, Islam, we cannot deny that there is taghut and kufr all the time. فَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِالطَّاغُوت وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ There is always this two movement opposite each other going on all the time. And the Taghuti movement does not only attack the faith, the iman, the culture, the society, and the lifestyle, but it also attacks the economy of the iman. Mm-hmm. And so we have to look at it from this perspective as well. When we are fighting against, for example, especially the Islamic Republic of Iran is now going through some of the toughest sanctions in history,
yeah.
Some of the toughest economic times. Now, this is called a jihad against those who are waging the economic war against Iran. That's one. The another way of looking at it is the jihad within the country itself. The struggle to become stable, the struggle to be, as Sheikh Rouhani mentioned, and as the leader is emphasizing on a year and an annually, and through the slogans, economic slogans, to be self-sufficient,
yeah.
To avoid being dependent, both at individual level, community level, and then in the level of a country.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very essential part of an Islamic economy, and this is what is meant by the struggle, the Islamic jihad,
and
in terms of economy.
The scale of your, I think, Islamic Ummah, because right now I have heard
exactly.
That so many people are using Israeli product. Still.
Yes, unfortunately. And you see, it's not about using the product of the enemy. It's about using the product of the Muslims. Why I'm saying this, you see, why do we always have to bring in this discrimination against the enemy? Bring the discrimination with Islam and the kufr.
Hmm.
Why? Because look at the lifestyle of Ayatollah Mar Ashi Najafi. If you go to the museum in Qom, it's a very beautiful place, and I oblige and I recommend every person who visits Qom to definitely go there. They have tour groups that carry inside, and you can also go there and ask them for a tour.
Sure.
There is at the beginning, they show you the clothings of Ayatollah Mar Ashi Najafi. And it shows the way this man thinks. The buttons of his shirt were kind of knots. And the philosophy behind it is because at that time, buttons were not manufactured by Muslims.
Mm.
So he would, instead of paying that economy, that money going out from the pocket of a Muslim to the world of the kuffar, mind you, at that time, is not just any kuffar, it's a colonial kuffar.
Yeah.
It's something that is no less than Israel right now.
Yeah.
But it was like a much greater level. At that time, Ayatollah says, look, if this money is going to come out from a Muslim going to the pocket of the kuffar, it's not deserving. He made his own buttons with knots.
Mm-hmm.
Pens he used to write, look at the struggles he went through. The pens that he used, he bought from Islamic countries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we have that discrimination amongst ourselves, individual level, then society, community, city, district, country, and between two Muslim countries. Now this will make the Islamic, the economy of the Ummah into the most optimistic economy that you can think of. It's going to be the most idealistic economy if you just think about it.
Yeah.
And that's how the Yahud, unfortunately, the Jews, especially the Zionists, are controlling the world with their economy of being discriminative between the Zionist Jews and the non-Jews.
Yeah.
They take riba, according to their jurisprudence, it's allowed for them to take usury from others and not to take from amongst themselves, because they themselves, they need to strengthen their economy, and they enslave the entire world under their feet. And so therefore, if Muslims also arm themselves with the Islamic jihad, economic jihad,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have to be violent, it can be very, very peaceful as well,
yeah.
and beneficial for both mutual sides, then it's going to be one of the best scenarios that you can face in Islamic Ummah.
Inshallah, thank you so much. And may we strive for an economy that reflects the value of justice, dignity, and compassion by saying that. Till another episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
To us you've always so close, everyone will say, please save me, except Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها لنا يوم القيامة. أمتي أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا.